Welcome to the Financially Intentional Podcast, the podcast all things personal finance, and hopefully some things you didn't even know you needed to know. I'm your host, Nasima McElroy, and my goal is to bring you topics and experts that will encourage you to take at least one actionable step that will aid you on your path to financial freedom.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Financially Intentional Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Financially Intentional Podcast. We have Stephen Stack in the building. He is going to share his extraordinary story of building wealth early in life. I'm just going to dive right in. So, Steve, let me hear your money story.
Yeah. So for me, the way I'll start it is looking back to, you know, how I came up as a kid with my parents. So I was one of three kids. So I've got two other siblings, and my parents were really good about giving us just foundational things of not spending more than what you make and to at least save for a rainy day. And so, like today, people would call it like an emergency fund, but you know, you could call it a rainy day fund if you want to be a little bit more old school. And so, like, I had that foundation of looking to try to avoid debt and have some money set aside. But what I didn't know was really what it looked like to invest. And so, when I was in college, I'm good with numbers, and I can remember I was sitting in my dorm room and just trying to do the math to figure out how long it would take me just to get to the first $1 million. And I was blown away. If you can imagine a college student being like, okay, well, what if I could put 20 grand away a year? How long would it take me to get? Cause you know, I'm like, $20,000 is a good bit of money. And yeah. Did the quick math, and it was a nice, cool 50 years to get to $1 million.
That's just like straight in a savings account, though, right?
Right. Just straight in a savings account. And so I figured out really quickly that I would not be able to save my way to wealth. So from there, I just started feverishly trying to figure out, okay, what makes sense as far as investing that has, you know, a level of safety, but a mix of risk that could get me there to where I wanted to be. And the last thing I'll say, just kind of giving people a framework of where I started from, was that I knew that typically people work to around like 60 or 65 retire. And so I thought, hey, well, what if I could cut 15 to 20 years off of that and get there by age 45, where I still would feel like I had some zest for life, you know, that my back wasn't aching all the time. I ain't teed up for a hip replacement yet. You know what I mean? And so that was my journey at the beginning, was just knowing, hey, I can't save my way to wealth, and let me put at least some kind of target age on what quote unquote retirement or just being retireable would look like. So that's what I was thinking about in college.
So you were 18 thinking about making $1 million and being able to retire early. So a lot of things that I discovered probably in my late 30s, you was already sitting like trying to put together a plan. Now, mind you, when I was 18, like I was just trying to get through college. I was like, what do I need to do? Make sure, you know, I land a good job after I graduate. And I was trying to like survive day to day because I didn't have people to help me with my finances. So I was like in school full time, working at a hair shop, like doing my little internship. So I was just grinding. Like I was straight in survival mode at 18. Like I could not imagine even having that mindset. I mean, I definitely have it now, but damn, if I had it at 18, I would be so far ahead. But that speaks to like what you were able to accomplish early in life. So let's just move into that. Like, what actions did you put into place in order to start building your wealth?
So one of the things that I figured out is, like, just looking at the quote unquote numbers, was that if I wanted to get to a certain level quickly, that there's really only two major things that I'd be able to do. And it would be either make a bunch or have a really high return on investment. And obviously, if you can combine the two, then it goes really, really well. So I knew I was good at math, and that's why I decided to major in engineering when I was in college. And for people who would know me from back in the day, so I went to Clemson University, and I actually would give tours on campus. So I had like 6 or 7 jobs while I was in school. So, I mean, I've never been afraid to go work and put in the work. But one of my jobs is I would give tours of the engineering department. So like I knew what the average starting salary was for the different engineering majors. And so telling other people, like, you know, kids that were in high school and their parents that were considering going to Clemson and being an engineer, and like it helped me just kind of know, okay, these are the numbers. This is how much I could potentially be making starting out, and then say, okay, what are things that could give me a real return on whatever dollars I have? So the first thing I started looking at was real estate, because I'm like, hey, at least I understand that. I kind of touch it and feel it. And the next thing I had to get more understanding on it was the stock market. And so both of these areas have made several countless multi-millionaires just across the history of them being available to people to invest in. And so what I did, just for people to say, hey, where did you start, is when I started working, is I'm like, okay, well, let me understand the benefits at the employer that I was at that time of their 401k, for example, to say they're going to match me up to a certain point, which at that employer, it was if I put in 6%, they would match it at 7. And because I was just coming out of college and my nicest piece of furniture, or my nicest possession, let alone piece of furniture, was a futon, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I think I went to like Value City and got me a recliner, which I magically still have to this day. It's like the last remaining memento from my times then, is I still have that. I still have that. But you know, so what I did is I'm like, hey, I don't live a fancy life coming from college. So I'm like, man, let me put the maximum amount of money possible into this, you know, 401k plan, because whatever money I have left over, I'm just going to have to figure out how to live on what's left. And if I want to put money towards like real estate and things like that, I'm going to have to figure it out off of what's left and see if I can do it, which the reality is I knew I could, because even though I worked 6 or 7 jobs in college, I still was making way more working full time than when I was in school. So those were some of the beginning super easy things that I started with.
But I want to ask, like, how did you know to do that? Like, who? I know your parents taught you the basics of finance, and that's just like, don't spend more than what you earn, right? Always put a little something to the side. And that's what most people just teach us. But like, most people don't go into a job understanding how to, first of all, interpret their benefits, especially their 401k benefits. A lot of people just either, if it's not automatically like taken out of your paycheck and contributed to, they usually just leave it alone and don't even touch it because they're so intimidated. Like, how did you get to that point where you knew that's what you needed to do? Like, I'm just like thinking about like the mindset here. Most people don't have that mindset. Most people just don't have that understanding, or they think it's something that they can figure out later. But you were already there in your first job.
Yeah. So here's what happened is I've always been an inquisitive person, so I would ask questions. So I've always believed this, or at least as far back as I can remember, is that my number one goal, just from a financial standpoint, so not from a life standpoint, because from life, it's, you know, I want to lead a life of impact. But from a financial standpoint, my goal has always been to have my money work harder for me than I do. And make no mistake, I work really hard. Like even like working with people one-on-one, like I expend more energy helping other people get their finances together than on my own. Now, part of that is because like I'm more in autopilot personally now. I mean, like I've been doing it for a while. So, but like that was always the goal, is I want the money to work harder for me than I do. And so I was always having a competition to see, hey, can I have this capital, these funds work really, really hard for me? So what I did is I just asked questions. I'm like, hey, what are the benefits? And I would talk to people who were closer to retirement. So it's a lady, which her, I'll say her first name, and I'd love to connect with her again if I could find her. Just sweet, sweet older Black lady. Her name was Nona. And I remember talking to her, and she gave me some really wise advice, because I'm like, I want to utilize that. I was going to make a strong income starting out with this engineering role. I'm like, what would you do if you were me? You know, being like a early 20 something, right? And she was just like, at a minimum, I would say at least work here 3 years so you could be fully vested, because that was the vesting schedule, which I don't want to assume people know what that means. So there is an amount of time that employers will have. Now, for some companies, you're vested on day one, but some it may be 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, but it's where you get to keep the match money that your employer puts towards your work retirement plan, whether it's a 401k, a 403b, TSP, 457, you know, so on and so forth. So she said the vesting schedule was 3 years. So she was like, at least shoot to work here for 3 years so you're fully vested in the 401k. And if you don't like it here, you can use this on your resume to say you worked at this big Fortune 500 company, go elsewhere, but you've at least gotten yourself a pretty good start financially. And so I took that to heart, especially as a person. So I'm a long ago, once upon a time, former athlete-ish, we'll just say it like that. But once upon a time, I used to play football. What I love about athletes, though, is that they learn to do, meaning like you practice so you can use it on the field. So like that's always been my wiring of, okay, someone tells me something, I learn it, understand it, and then I immediately look to apply it. So that was an example of what got me thinking that way, to your question.
Right. So she was like, listen, just stay here until you get vested. But the thing is that like you came into it like, okay, like I'm already living broke. Like I might as well like, and this is more money than I already had. I mean, than I've ever had. So I might as well. But most people come out like, I've been in college for all this time. I'm making money now. I deserve to have nice things. And so that's what I'm talking about. Like you, the way that you just look at things in general is like totally, totally different. But that's the way you need to be thinking about it, because what ends up happening is this thing called lifestyle inflation, where you're making more money, but then you start adjusting your lifestyle to meet that amount of money. And so you never are able to meet your financial goals, because your financial goals are going to live in that gap, right? And that gap is the difference between what you're earning and what you're spending. So you were just like, I'm going to just go hard from the beginning. And so you started maxing out your retirement contributions, your 401k, and then where did that lead you? What was the next thing you started looking at?
Yeah, so to give people a framework on the timing, when I started working, it was in the middle of 2008, 2009. That was the time frame. So there was this thing going on called the Great Recession. And I can remember because, you know, there were some people that I went to school with that didn't have jobs lined up for them after school. And so I was really fortunate to have that because I had done internships and things like that to prepare myself to be able to hit the ground running. So I was hearing all of this news about how horrible things were economically, but I still remembered like randomly, like this quote from a Warren Buffett, when people are fearful, be greedy. And when people are greedy, be fearful. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to do the inverse of what other people are doing. And I think there was a movie that came out in 06 called The Inside Man. Denzel Washington is in it. There's a white dude named Clive Owen. It's actually a pretty good movie. But if you happen to watch the movie, there's a random line in the movie where one of the characters says, when there's blood in the streets, buy property. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I'm going to just kind of tuck that in the back of my brain. So I think the movie came out in 06. Somebody can fact check from the audience on that. But I know it was before the Great Recession. So I remembered that and I'm like, okay, so I'm investing in the market. So I'm buying while things are low, like in the stock market. But there's real blood in the streets. People talking about their retirement accounts have cut in half. So it must be really bad. And there's a housing crisis, all kinds of foreclosures. So I'm like, let me try to figure out this real estate investing thing. And so honestly, what I did is I started with just trying to talk to people about my interest in doing it. And I did it everywhere. So I wasn't sophisticated at the time. Social media wasn't popping like that. So I would be like my employer at that time. They had me do something similar to like Toastmasters or Dale Carnegie, like speech stuff. And so they'd be like, hey, you got to give a speech that's like 1 minute or 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And so sometimes what I would do with my speeches is I would just talk about that I was looking to be a real estate investor. So I was literally using that medium to sharpen myself as a public speaker and be good with time to say, hey, can I succinctly tell someone what I'm trying to do real estate wise in 60 seconds or 3 minutes or 5 minutes? And so eventually I started making connections with people where they're like, oh man, you know, this seems like a sharp guy, whatever like that. And people just wanted to help me. So I was really fortunate to eventually build a team of people that allowed me to make that first real estate investment.
Okay. So before we talk about what that first real estate investment is, I think what's super important and what people need to pick up on is like, I think like innately you have things built into you that a lot of people have to learn. And not to take this as, oh my God, well, he did that because he is X, Y, Z. But what can I take from what he innately does and has been successful with and apply that to my life? Like, so when you were like, you wanted to learn about real estate, but you took that and turned it into an elevator pitch and talked about it everywhere. That is a skill set. That's what people don't understand. Like, people think like, you kind of have to know all these things to kind of be in rooms or to speak about where you want to go and what you want to do. Like, people wait and to get to a certain point before they start speaking on what they want to do, instead of saying like, hey, my name is Steven. And I want, you know, I'm thinking about investing in real estate and whatever your elevator pitch is, and just speaking it to people in several different rooms. And the thing is that the more that you do it, the better it's going to get, the shorter it's going to get, the more effective it's going to be. So you're practicing, number one, that's a public speaking skill. That's a skill that's transferable to every area of your life. And then number two, because people don't do this, people are innately just drawn to you and they want to help you because you're just outside of the box, and they see that you're a person about action. So I just want to like touch on that, because I think that a lot of times people either frown on your successes and saying, well, he did that because, and not saying, well, damn, this is a skill that if I pick up and I learn, this is something I can apply to every area in my life and be able to be successful in whatever I want to do. And it's just using your gift of gab. Like, it doesn't take money, but what it does is intrigue people to be willing to help you. And so I just want to highlight that, because I think like that's super dope and it's super important. And it's just something like, if I always tell people, if you can take one thing away from this episode and apply that, it's going to make your life exponentially easier and make wealth building that much faster for you. And so I think that that is pure gift. And I think, but it's something that can be learned and something that anybody can do. From wherever you're at, it doesn't take money. So that's perfect. So what was that first investment that you made, that real estate investment that you made?
Yeah, so I bought a property. It was a foreclosure. It was a single family home, and didn't know the first thing about it. You know what I mean? Like I kind of had a feel for it, made a bunch of mistakes as far as a length of time, and I had to hire it and like fire a contractor. I mean, it was crazy. But what I knew how to add, I knew how to subtract, I knew how to multiply and divide. And literally that was all I really needed to figure it out. So when I bought the property, I knew what a finished house should sell for. So I did something called a CMA, or a comparative market analysis. So had a realtor run, hey, this is what these homes should sell for in this area. So I'm like, okay, so this is like the top, this is somewhere in the middle, and this would be if I wanted to get a quick sale, like the end price. So what I knew is, I'm like, hey, I need to buy it and all the repairs be under that amount with some cushion to get a profit. So literally that was it. That's all I, and so I bought it and started doing the, like having contractors come in and do the repairs. A super side note, I personally hate wallpaper to this day because of that property, because in a money saving effort, I was up steaming the walls, pulling off wallpaper. I'm like, yo, I'll never do this again. I'll just have to buy it better to not ever have to do this again. But long story short, it actually worked out. I think I ended up making around like $10,000. I think the exact amount might have been like $9,875, something like that. I can find it. I got the numbers for the original deal.
I bet you do. But the thing is that, so when you went into real estate, because of all your research and all talking to people, you decide to do, was it a live and flip, or was it just like you buying a property to sell it? Like what modality did you use in real estate?
Yeah. I bought it to sell it. So at the time I was actually renting, like I had an apartment. And so the first property I bought was not to live in. It was to do a flip. So
I don't want to talk about that, because I talk about that frequently on my platform, and we had a conversation back and forth about it, is that like most of the time when people think about buying real estate, they think about buying a personal property and then looking at that as like their life investment. Right. And I talk about like, buying real estate is great, but just understand what's an investment and what's not an investment. And I think it's, and like that renting is not bad. It just like everybody has to have a place to live. Everybody has living expenses. It's just like, what are you doing with that money? So you were renting, but you were using real estate to actually invest. So that's an example of buying real estate as an investment. And also renting while doing so. So I think that people need to hear that, because a lot of times people they don't know what they don't know. So I thank you for sharing that. So you made your near $10,000 profit. And then did you continue to do that in real estate, or what did you do next?
So the plan, the thought was I wanted to get some chunks, because ultimately I wanted to buy long-term rental properties. and I wanted to do multifamily property. So I used the chunks that I made from doing some flips to push it towards buying multifamily properties, which I started with buying duplexes, because the thing about doing rehabs or flips or whatever you want to call it is that you don't make money until the very end. So like the whole process is you're putting out money and you have holding costs, repair costs, all that kind of stuff, but you don't actually make your profit until you've sold it at some point at the end. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not personally wild about that. I know people who they've made, you know, a ton of money doing that, but I was like, that's not really my personal thing. So I wanted to have it where it's more like getting steady funds over time while also holding it for the long term too, of getting that capital appreciation on the property as well. Which, by the way, let me say this, for all things investing, long-term investing is actually the way. Like, that's really where the crazy growth is. No disrespect to people wanting to do the quick flip or the play. You know what I mean? No shade towards that. Just saying that the long-term investment or play, it, like, that's really where you can see dramatic growth. And that can be in business. It really doesn't matter what it is. Over time, your efforts or your monies compound.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think where people get caught up in is that, like, fast money and money come, money go. It's like that. Like, if you're looking for fast money, you're probably going to, chances are you're going to lose it. And you're not going to learn. You don't have that solid, like, long-term foundation. The thing about long-term investing is it doesn't mean that you don't make money fast. It just means that the money that you're making is able to compound. And just like you were saying earlier, you want your money to work harder for you. And the longer that is in the game, the longer it's able to work hard. And so that's where that comes in. So again, I think that that's a super valuable lesson for people to understand that it's about the long term. And when I say long term, people are thinking, oh, I got to wait till 50 years. That's not even desirable. But for you, long term is just over a couple of years. And I kind of want to get you to kind of where you're at right now and how those foundational things that you've done has led you to be in a place of financial independence. Because let's just say it, like, you don't have to work for anybody if you don't want to. But how did you get to that point? People need to know, like, okay, where you're at right now financially and how those things that you did, those foundational things that you did, led to get you there.
Yeah. So we may have buried the lead here, but so I made my first million at age 31. So we probably should throw that out there for the people who are listening. But so what I did and what, so I want to speak to the people that they're like, man, I'm right at the beginning. What should I be doing? A lot of that super old school or just basic, simple principles, like, I use those of saying, hey, let me first stabilize and have some money set aside in case some things go sideways, or you can call that an emergency fund. Having that allowed me to have more confidence to be aggressive in the investment decisions that I made, avoiding debt to where it didn't pressurize me to have to go for the quick flip or the quick play, because I literally had properties that by being able to buy them, take my time, where they did a 5x or a 6 or 7 or close to 10x return on my initial investment. But it was because I had time to let it breathe. I wasn't in a rush to make things happen. Now, timing did help, of because it was in the heart of the Great Recession, that was helpful, because that rebound was crazy to the upside. Which, by the way, like, as we are speaking, there is economic volatility, chaos, turmoil. The headlines are all over the place. We're in a recession, or we're gonna be, it's likely. Like, if that stuff is unsettling you, block out the noise. But be aware that when there is turmoil, that there's also opportunity like baked into that. So like I'll go real quick on sharing this real quick, is the Chinese word for chaos, I think it's called ji, and it's a compound word. The first part means danger, and the second part is opportunity. So like if you think about it, in chaotic times, in rough times, you want to be aware of the danger, but don't miss the opportunity that is also staring you in the face right in front of you. And I believe that in the uncertain times that we're in, where inflation's going crazy and, you know, stock market, it was way up last year and it's been down throughout this year, be mindful of the opportunities that are there. You respect the danger of saying like, hey, I want to have some money tucked aside in case things go sideways for you personally, you know, in your own household, but don't miss the opportunity. And that's what I did in the last like real rough times, like certified, where we knew as I did that. And then when it went to the upside, it wasn't the thing is like hitting a million at 31. It wasn't like it happened that I was almost there at 27. Like it just went shoo. You know what I mean? Like kind of did an exponential.
You know the numbers, but just for people to understand the power of investment, compound interest, and the opportunity of the time you got into the market, which was in the middle of a great recession. Can you explain like how much money you actually invested, like out of pocket, that got you to that moment?
Holy moly. It was less than half. I know that. So to put that in perspective for people who are listening, I invested less than 500,000 to end up with a million, like when I got to the first million.
Yeah. So what I want you to do is, because we're in currently in a state of kind of turmoil as far as like things going down. We're talking about intern recession, which we've been talking about forever, but now people are actually feeling it with the layoffs, with the stock market dropping and all of those kind of things. What we talked about earlier, some blood in the streets. So what are like some tips and some tangible things people can do right now to see the upside when the market turns around?
So some tangible things is assuming that you're stabilized. So I want to assume that you've got funds aside in case things go sideways. So like the average time that it takes for someone to find a new job in the middle of a recession is 3 months. So like when you hear people say have 3 to 6 months as a quote unquote rule of thumb, I want you to put something real to that. So assuming you have that, what I would say is the simplest way. And by the way, that Chinese word is not chaos, it's crisis, opportunity and a danger. But what I would say is a super simple way is you could do something called dollar cost averaging in the stock market, which the name isn't intuitive to what it means, but it's just saying you can pick a set amount that you're going to do monthly or weekly, and that you're buying regardless of what the price is of the asset that you're buying, which a super simple way to do that instead of having to look at 10-Ks and 10-Qs of companies or looking at, you know, their reports and earnings calls and things like that. A super solid way is just buying a well-known broad-based index, or people will call them index funds. That's a wonderful place to be able to invest money, where you're kind of like buying the whole market, or you're buying a large portion of it or representation of it. That would be a great place to start, of doing like that dollar cost averaging. If you're in a space where you're a little more potentially sophisticated, you could, like, say if you know how businesses work and things like that, this could be a wonderful opportunity to invest in like someone's private business that is doing well. So to kind of give you some examples, cleaning services tend to be recession resistant because people who are typically paying for their homes to be cleaned, they tend to have more resources. And that's one of the things they don't want to give up. You know what I mean? Like if you've been paying for your home to be cleaned professionally by somebody, typically that's not one of the first things that you'll cut in your spending because you see value in it giving you time back and your home smells good and fresh scents and all that. So like there could be opportunity there if you understand how that business works and can help that, you know, that business person be able to expand. So I'm just trying to give you guys some different things to think about. That's not just the stock market or real estate or things, just broadening your base of what you could do.
Right. So we need that 3 to 6 months of emergency fund, which is 3 to 6 months of your living expenses. Look at dollar cost averaging into the market, and it's easy to just invest in index funds where you own the market as opposed to just individual stocks, because you know how that is right now. And then look at some opportunities. And I love the private investment opportunities because this is a time where there's businesses that need access to capital that don't necessarily or can't necessarily go traditional routes. And so there's several opportunities there. And that is another way of looking at investing and growing your money because like anything else, when the market turns around, you're going to own a part of a company that, you know, is going to blow up just like anything else. And then so you can invest a little amount right now, own a portion of that company or have them paying you back, you know, a high interest rate. So it can be a combination of those things. But I think like those are kind of investments that people kind of like sleep on or don't understand. But they can be just as simple as buying an index fund if it's set up correctly. So I love those options that you give people because this is a time where a lot of people are in a state of fear. And I think with a little mindset shift and understanding that in these conditions are where million and billionaires are made, but being able to partake in that, because typically people that look like us are excluded from this because we go into survival mode when it does not take a lot to turn your finances around and be able to buy into opportunities during these times. And it doesn't take a lot because everything is on sale. Everything is cheap right now. So I think those are like perfect examples of how we can use these times and instead of working out of a place of fear, work out of a place of opportunity. And I love that Chinese proverb or whatever it is that they call it or quote. But I think it's super important that we understand those things. And that's why this is here, to give you exposure to people and opportunities that you didn't even know was possible. Because I didn't know that this was possible. I didn't become a millionaire at 31. I didn't even start turning my finances around until I was 34. That's when I started becoming aware that this world even existed. So if we can shortcut those things for you and you can actually take actions on those steps, this is why this podcast exists, especially for Black people, because if you guys aren't aware, our wealth is approaching zero. Our total net worth as a community is approaching zero, and devastating effects were compounded by the pandemic. And people need to understand that we have to take action. And a lot of it is about securing your own personal finances, because if you don't secure your own personal finances, you don't have the power to impact or help other people. You don't have the power to impact the social issues that are affecting you and maybe hold you down. But it also gives you a strong footing to be able to maneuver in life and take control over your life in ways that you couldn't if you're in survival mode. And so I just really want to thank you, Stephen, for being here, because I feel like people just, first of all, I really feel like the way that you think needs to be like trademarked and put into a system, like Stephen Stacks, like methodology. Just the way that you think about the world is what sets you up for success. But these are things that are replicable if people knew what was possible and what people could do. And so I hope that in hearing what you have done, people are able to implement these things in their lives. And so super dope story, super like the mindset is the mindset for me. And it's the mindset that people need to understand, like on top of like all the numbers that he put out there, like just think about the way that Stephen looks at the world and looks at opportunity. And if you are able to implement that in your life, is really going to help you in all areas of your life. So I appreciate that. And I just want you to share with people how they can reach out to you. I know you be on the under, and I'm just very fortunate that I have the opportunity to know you, but real G's move in silence, and Stephen definitely does. So that's another thing to note. But where can people get in contact with you or follow you if they want to learn more about you?
Yeah. So a simple way to catch me, I've got a website. It's just Stephen with a V, LStack.com. So that's one way, StephenLStack.com. I'm most active on Instagram. My handle is @StackingWithStack, which, by the way, I always feel like I have to give this disclaimer. I will never solicit you for money. I'm not going to ask you how your crypto trading is going or anything like that. So because there's a lot of, you know, scammers and fake accounts and things like that. So but I just try to share things regularly that are going to help people think about money in a good space, or maybe some timely things that may be happening just in general in the, you know, in the country and society, or just something that impacts a lot of people financially. So that's a good place to be able to connect with me. I do actually respond to people when they reach out as well. So I appreciate you having me. This was really fun.
Super dope conversation. And reach out to Stephen. But like when I tell people, like you're the average of the people that you surround yourself with, and to curate your social media and the things that you consume around people that you aspire to, Stephen is definitely someone that I would add to that. Like, because like I said, it's just a mindset shift. It's just a way of thinking about things. And if everybody is panicking and you see him speaking over here smiling and he making moves in the background, you need to know what he's doing. You don't need to follow the masses. And so I think, you know, he's in my circle. I want him to be in yours. So make sure you're following Stephen. Stacking with Stack. Thank you so much, Stephen. This is the mom. This has been the mom. And I appreciate you, and I'll see you around. But yeah, everybody make sure you connect with Stephen. Add him to all your socials. And, you know, tell a friend that this is where it's at. All right, Steve. Thanks.
You're welcome. And thank you, for real.
For real.
Thank you for listening to my mommy's podcast. Bye-bye.